befall that cobbler before the bastard passes into legend. If it's meant to befall him, it'll befall him, Gar said with conviction. Leave it to me. And Dandelion, the dwarf took up, will blacken his name in a ballad, make him look a fool, so that he'll suffer shame and dishonour for generations to come. You've forgotten about one thing, Geralt said. There's one person here who could throw a spoke in the wheel, who won't assent to any divisions or agreements. I mean, Ike of Dunaisley. Have you talked to him?
What about?
Boholt said, grinding his teeth, using a stout stick to move the logs around in the campfire.
You won't get anywhere with Ike, Geralt. He knows nothing about business.
As we rode up to your camp, Trijactor said, we met him. He was kneeling on the rocks in full armour, staring at the sky.
He's always doing that, Beanpole said. He's meditating or saying his prayers. He says he must, because he has orders from the gods to protect people from evil.
Back home in Crinfrid, Boholt muttered, we keep people like that on a chain in the cowshed and give them a piece of coal so they can draw outlandish pictures on the walls. But that's enough gossip about my neighbours. We are talking business.
A petite young woman with black hair, held tightly by a gold hairnet, wrapped in a woolen cloak, noiselessly entered the circle of light.
What reeks so much round here? Yapin Zirin asked, pretending not to see her. Not brimstone, is it?
No.
Boholt, glancing to the side and sniffing pointedly.
It's musk or some other scent.
No, it has to be.
The dwarf grimaced.
Oh, why, it's the noble Madame Yennefer. Welcome, welcome.
The sorceress's eyes slowly swept over the company, her shining eyes coming to rest for a while on the Witcher. Geralt smiled faintly.
May I join you?
But of course, good lady, Boholt said and hiccuped. Sit down here on the saddle. Move your ass, Kennet, and give the noble sorceress the saddle.
From what I hear, you're talking business, gentlemen.
Yennefer sat down, stretching out her shapely black-stockinged legs in front of her.
Without me?
We didn't dare, Yapin Zirid said. Trouble such an important personage.
It would be better, Yapin.
Yennefer narrowed her eyes, turning her head towards the dwarf.
If you kept quiet. From the very first day, you've been treating me as if I were nothing but air. So please continue. Don't let me bother you, because it doesn't bother me, either.
Really, my lady?
Yapin's smile revealed uneven teeth.
May I be infested by ticks if I haven't been treating you better than the air? I'd be known, for example, to spoil the air, which there's no way I dare to do in your presence.
The bearded boys roared with thunderous laughter, but fell silent immediately at the sight of the blue glow which suddenly enveloped the sorceress.
One more word, and you'll end as spoiled air, Yapin,
Yennefer said, in a voice with a metallic edge, and a black stain on the grass.
Indeed.
Boholt cleared his throat, relieving the silence that had fallen.
Quiet, Zigrin. Let's hear what Madame Yennefer has to say to us. She just complained that we're talking about business without her, from which I conclude she has some kind of offer for us. Let's hear, my lords, what kind of offer it is, as long as she doesn't suggest killing the dragon by herself using spells.
And what if I do? Yennefer raised her head. Don't think it's possible, Boholt.
It might be possible, but it's not profitable, because you'd be certain to demand half the dragon's hoard.
At least half, the sorceress said coldly.
Well, you'll see for yourself there's no profit in it for us. We, my lady, are poor warriors, and if the loot passes us by, hunger will come beckoning. We live on sorrel and pigweed. Only once in a blue moon do we manage to catch a marmot.
Yapin Zigrin interrupted in a sombre voice.
We drink spring water.
Boholt took a swig from the demijohn and shuddered slightly.
There's no choice for us, Madame Yennefer. It's either loot or freeze to death in the winter, huddled against a fence, for inns cost money.
Beer does too, Gar added.
And dirty strumpets,
Beanpole said, daydreaming.
Which is why,
Boholt said, looking up at the sky. We will kill the dragon by ourselves, without spells and without your help.
Are you certain about that? Just remember, there are limits to what is possible, Boholt.
Perhaps there are, but I've never come across them. No, m'lady, I repeat, we'll kill the dragon ourselves, without any spells. Particularly, Yarpin Zegrin added, since spells surely have their own limits, which, unlike our own, we don't know.
Did you come up with that yourself?
Yennefer asked slowly.
Or did someone put you up to it? Does the presence of the Witcher in this select company give you the right to such brazenness?
No, Boholt replied, looking at Geralt, who seemed to be dozing, stretched out lazily on a blanket with his saddle beneath his head. The Witcher has nothing to do with it. Listen, noble Yennefer, we put forward a proposition to the king, but he hasn't honoured us with an answer. We're patient. We'll wait till the morning. Should the king agree to a settlement, we ride on together. If not, we go back.
Must you? The dwarf snarled.
There won't be any bargaining, Boholt continued. Take it or leave it. Repeat our words to Nidamir, Madam Yennefer, and I'll tell you a deal's also good for you and for Dorogaray, if you come to an agreement with him. We don't need the dragon's carcass, mark you. We'll take but the tail, and the rest is yours. You can have whatever you want. We won't stint you with the teeth or the brain. We'll keep nothing that you need for sorcery.
Of course, Yarpin Zegrin added, chuckling. The carrion will be for you sorcerers. No one will take it from you, unless some other vultures do.
Yennefer stood up, throwing her cloak over her shoulder.
Nidamir won't wait until morning, she said sharply. He has agreed to your conditions already, against mine and Dorogaray's advice, mark you.
Nidamir, Boholt slowly drawled, is displaying astonishing wisdom for one so young. To me, Madam Yennefer, wisdom includes the ability to turn a deaf ear to foolish or insincere advice. Yarpin Zegrin snorted into his beard.
You'll be singing a different tune. The sorceress put her hands on her hips. When the dragon lacerates and perforates you, and shatters your shin bones, you'll be licking my shoes and begging for help, as usual. How well, oh, how very well, do I know your sort. I know you so well it makes me sick.
She turned away and disappeared into the gloom without saying goodbye.
In my day, Yarpin Zegrin said, sorceresses stayed in their towers, read learned books and stirred cauldrons. They didn't get under warriors' feet, didn't interfere in our business, and didn't wiggle their bottoms in front of a fellow.
Frankly speaking, she can wiggle all she likes, Dandelion said, tuning his lute. Right, Geralt? Geralt? Hey, where's the Witcher?
What do we care?
Boholt muttered, throwing another log on the fire.
He went somewhere. Perhaps he had to relieve himself, my lord. It's his business.
That's right, the bard agreed, and strummed the strings. Shall I sing you something?
Sing, dammit, Yarpin Zegrin said and spat. But only thinking, Dandelion, that I'll give you as much as a shilling for your bleating. It's not the royal court, son.
I can see that, the troubadour nodded.
Chapter 5
Yennefer.
She turned around as though surprised, though the Witcher was in no doubt she had heard his steps well before. She placed a small wooden pail on the floor, straightened up, and brushed aside some hair, which had freed itself from her golden hairnet and fell in curls onto her shoulders.
Geralt?
She was wearing just two colours, as usual, black and white. Black hair, long black eyelashes, forcing one to guess the colour of the eyes concealed beneath them. A black skirt and a short black tunic with a white fur collar. A white blouse of the sheerest linen. On her neck, a black velvet ribbon adorned with an obsidian star bestrewn with tiny diamonds.
You haven't changed at all.
Neither have you, she sneered. And in both cases, it is equally normal. Or, if you prefer, equally abnormal. In any case, The mention of it, though it may not be a bad way to begin the conversation, is meaningless. Am I right?
You are, he nodded,
looking to one side, towards Nidamir's tent and the fires of the royal bowmen, obscured by the dark shapes of wagons. From the more distant campfire floated Dandelion's sonorous voice singing The Stars Above the Path, one of his most popular romantic ballads.
Well, now that we have the preliminaries out of the way, the sorceress said, I wonder what's coming next.
You see, Yennefer.
I see, she interrupted sharply, but I don't understand. Why did you come here, Geralt? Surely not because of the dragon. I presume nothing has changed in that regard.
No, nothing's changed.
Why then, I pray, have you joined the party?
If I said that it was because of you, would you believe me?
She looked at him in silence, and there was something in her flashing eyes which Geralt did not like.
I believe you. Why not?
She finally said. Men like to meet their former lovers, like to relive memories. They like to imagine that erstwhile erotic ecstasies give them some kind of perpetual ownership of their partner. It enhances their self-importance. You are no exception, in spite of everything.
Nevertheless, he smiled. You're right, Yennefer. The sight of you makes me feel wonderful. In other words, I'm glad to see you.
And is that all? Well, let's say I'm also glad. Having said that, I wish you good night. I am retiring for the night, as you can see. Before that, I intend to bathe, and I usually get undressed to perform that activity. Withdraw, then, in order graciously to assure me a minimum of discretion.
Yen.
He held his hands out to her.
Don't call me that!
She hissed furiously, springing back, blue and red sparks streaming from her extended fingers.
And if you touch me, I'll scorch your eyes out, you bastard!
The witcher moved back. The sorceress, somewhat calmer, brushed her hair aside once again and stood before him with her fists resting on her hips.
What did you think, Geralt? That we'd have a nice, cheerful gossip? That we'd reminisce about the old days? That perhaps at the end of our chat we'd get onto a wagon and make love on the sheepskins, just like that, for old time's sake, did you?
Geralt, not certain if the sorceress was magically reading his mind or had only guessed right, kept silent, smiling wryly.
Those 4 years left their mark, Geralt.
I'm over it now, which is the only reason why I didn't spit in your eyes during today's encounter. But don't let my civility deceive you.
Yennefer, be quiet! I gave you more than I've ever given any other man, you scoundrel! I don't know myself why I gave it to you. And you... Oh, no, my dear. I'm not a slut or an elf woman met by chance in the forest who can be discarded in the morning, walked out on without being woken with a posy of violets left on the table, who can be made a mockery of. Beware. Utter a single word and you will regret it.
Geralt did not utter a single word, correctly sensing the anger seething in Yennefer. The sorceress once again brushed aside some unruly locks and looked him in the eyes from close up.
We've met. That's too bad, she said softly. But we shall not make a spectacle of ourselves for everybody. We shall save face. We'll pretend to be good friends. But don't be mistaken, Geralt. There is nothing between us now. Nothing. Understood? And be glad of it, because it means I have now abandoned the plans which, until recently, I still harboured regarding you. But that in no way means I've forgiven you. I shall never forgive you, Witcher. Never.
She turned around suddenly, seized the pail, spraying water around, and disappeared behind a wagon. Geralt chased away a mosquito whining above his ear, and slowly walked back towards the campfire, where Dandelion's performance was being rewarded with half-hearted applause. He looked up at the dark blue sky above the black, serrated saw blade of the mountain peaks. He felt like bursting out laughing. He did not know why. Chapter 6.
"Careful up there! Take heed!"
Boholt called, turning around on the coachman's seat to look back towards the column.
"Closer to the rocks! Take heed!"
The wagons trundled along, bouncing on stones. The wagoners swore, lashing the horses with their reins and leaning out. They glanced anxiously to see if the wheels were sufficiently far from the edge of the ravine, along which ran a narrow, uneven road. Below, at the bottom of the chasm, the waters of the River Brea foamed white among the boulders. Geralt reined back his horse, pressing himself against the rock wall, which was covered with sparse brown moss and white lichen. He let the reaver's wagon overtake him. Beanpole galloped up from the head of the column where he'd been leading the cavalcade with the Barefield scouts.
"Right," he shouted, "with a will. It widens out up ahead."
King Nidamir and Gilenstein, both on horseback, accompanied by several mounted bowmen, came alongside Geralt. Behind them rattled the wagons of the royal caravan. Even further back trundled the dwarves' wagon, driven by Yarp and Zigrin, who was yelling relentlessly. Nidamir, a very thin, freckled youngster in a white sheepskin jacket, passed the witcher, casting him a haughty, though distinctly bored look. Gilenstiern straightened up and reined in his horse.
"Over here, witcher sir," he said overbearingly.
"Yes?"
Geralt jabbed his mare with his heels and rode slowly over to the Chancellor behind the caravan. He was astonished that, in spite of having such an impressive paunch, Gilenstiern preferred horseback to a comfortable ride in a wagon.
"Yesterday,"
Gilenstiern said, gently tugging his gold-studded reins and throwing a turquoise cape off his shoulder.
"Yesterday, you said the dragon does not interest you. What does interest you, then, witcher sir? Why do you ride with us?"
"It's a free country, Chancellor.
For the moment. But in this cortege, my dear Geralt, everyone should know his place, and the role he's to fulfil, according to the will of King Nidamir. Do you comprehend that?"
"What are you driving at, my dear Gilenstiern?"
"I shall tell you. I've heard that it has recently become tiresome to negotiate with you witches. The thing is that whenever a witcher is shown a monster to be killed, the witcher, rather than take his sword and slaughter it, begins to ponder whether it is right, whether it is transgressing the limits of what is possible, whether it is not contrary to the code, and whether the monster really is a monster, as though it wasn't clear at first glance. It seems to me that you are simply doing too well. In my day, witches didn't have two pennies to rub together, just two stinking boots. They didn't question, they slaughtered what they were ordered to, whether it was a werewolf, a dragon, or a tax collector. All that counted was a clean cut. So, Geralt?"
"Do you have a job for me, Gilenstiern?" the witcher asked coldly. "If so, tell me what. I'll think it over. But if you don't, there's no sense wasting our breath, is there?"
"Job?"
the Chancellor sighed.
"No, I don't. This all concerns a dragon, and that clearly transgresses your limits, witcher. So I prefer the reavers. I merely wanted to alert you, warn you. King Nidamir and I may tolerate the whims of witches and their classification of monsters into good and bad, but we do not wish to hear about them, much less see them affected in our presence. Don't meddle in royal matters, witcher, and don't consort with Dorigeray."
"I'm not accustomed to consulting with sorcerers. Why such an inference?"
"Dorigeray," Gilenstiern said, "surpasses even witches with his whims. He does not stop at categorizing monsters into good and bad. He considers them all good."
"That's overstating the case somewhat."
"Clearly, but he defends his views with astonishing obstinacy. I truly would not be surprised if something befell him. And the fact he joined us keeping such curious company—"
"I am not Dorigeray's companion, and neither is he mine.
Don't interrupt. The company is strange. A witcher crawling with scruples like a fox's pelt with fleas. A sorcerer spouting druidic humbug about equilibrium in nature. The silent knight Borg three jackdaws and his escort from Zaricania, where, as is generally known, sacrifices are made before the image of a dragon. And suddenly they all join in the hunt. Strange, isn't it?
If you insist, then yes it is.
Know then, the Chancellor said, that the most mysterious problems find, as experience proves, the simplest solutions. Don't compel me, Witcher, to use them.
I don't understand. Oh, but you do.
Thank you for the conversation, Geralt.
Geralt stopped. Gilenstierne urged his horse on and joined the king, catching up with the caravan. Ike of Dinesla rode alongside, wearing a quilted caftan of light-coloured leather, marked with the impressions of a breastplate, pulling a packhorse laden with a suit of armour, a uniformly silver shield, and a powerful lance. Geralt greeted him by raising his hand, but the knight-errant turned his head to the side, tightening his thin lips, and spurred his horse on.
"He isn't keen on you," Dordogaray said, riding over. "Eh, Geralt?"
"Clearly."
"Competition, isn't it? The two of you have similar occupations, except that Ike is an idealist and you are a professional. A minor difference, particularly for the ones you kill."
"Don't compare me to Ike, Dordogaray. The devil knows who you're wrong with that comparison, him or me, but don't compare us."
"As you wish. To me, frankly speaking, you are equally loathsome."
"Thank you."
"Don't mention it."
The sorcerer patted the neck of his horse, which had been scared by all the yelling from Yarpin and his dwarves.
"To me, Witcher, calling killing a vocation is loathsome, low, and nonsensical. Our world is in equilibrium. The annihilation, the killing of any creatures that inhabit this world upsets that equilibrium. And a lack of equilibrium brings closer extinction. Extinction and the end of the world as we know it."
"A druidic theory," Geralt pronounced. "I know it. An old hierophant expounded it to me once back in Rivia. 2 days after our conversation, he was torn apart by were-rats. It was impossible to prove any upset in equilibrium."
"The world, I repeat," Dordogaray glanced at him indifferently, "is in equilibrium. Natural equilibrium. Every species has its own natural enemies. Everyone is the natural enemy of other species. That also includes humans. The extermination of the natural enemies of humans, which you dedicate yourself to, and which one can begin to observe, threatens the degeneration of the race."
"Do you know what, sorcerer?" Geralt said, annoyed. "One day, take yourself to a mother whose child has been devoured by a basilisk and tell her she ought to be glad, because thanks to that, the human race has escaped degeneration. See what she says to you."
"A good argument, Witcher,"
Yennefer said, riding up to them on her large black horse.
"And you, Dordogaray, be careful what you say."
"I am not accustomed to concealing my views."
Yennefer rode between them. The Witcher noticed that the golden hairnet had been replaced by a rolled-up white kerchief.
"Start concealing them as quickly as possible, Dordogaray," she said, "especially before Nidamir and the Reavers, who already suspect you plan to interfere in the killing of the dragon. As long as you only talk, they treat you like a harmless maniac. If, however, you try to start anything, they'll break your neck before you manage to let out a sigh."
The sorcerer smiled contemptuously and condescendingly.
"And besides," Yennefer continued, "by expressing those views, you damage the solemnity of our profession and vocation."
"How so?"
"You can apply your theory to all sorts of creatures and vermin, Dordogaray, but not to dragons. For dragons are the natural greatest enemies of man. And I do not refer to the degeneration of the human race, but to its survival. In order to survive, one has to crush one's enemies. Enemies which might prevent that survival."
"Dragons aren't man's enemies," Geralt broke in.
The sorceress looked at him and smiled, but only with her lips.
"In that matter," she said, "leave the judging to us humans. Your role, Witcher, is not to judge. It's to get a job done."
"Like a programmed servile golem."
"That was your comparison, not mine,"
Yennefer replied coldly.
"But, well, it's apt."
"Yennefer," Dordogaray said, "for a woman of your education and age, you are coming out with some astonishing tripe. Why is it that dragons have been promoted in your eyes to become the foremost enemies of man? Why not other, 100-fold more dangerous creatures, those that have 100-fold more victims on their consciences than dragons? Why not hirikas, forktails, manticores, amphisbaenas or griffins? Why not wolves?
I'll tell you why not. The advantage of men over other races and species, the fight for their due place in nature, for living space, can only be won when nomadism, wandering from place to place in search of sustenance in accordance with nature's calendar, is finally eliminated. Otherwise, the proper rhythm of reproduction will not be achieved, since human children are dependent for too long. Only a woman, safe and secure behind town walls or in a stronghold, can bear children according to the proper rhythm, which means once a year. Fecundity, Doragare, is growth, is the condition for survival and domination. And now we come to dragons. Only a dragon and no other monster can threaten a town or stronghold. Were dragons not to be wiped out, people would, for their own safety, disperse instead of cleaving together, because dragon's fire in a densely populated settlement is a nightmare, means hundreds of victims and terrible destruction. That is why dragons must be utterly wiped out, Doragare.
Doragare looked at her with a strange smile on his face. Do you know what, Yennefer? I wouldn't like to see the day your idea of the dominance of man comes about, when people like you will occupy their due place in nature. Fortunately, it will never come to that. You would rather poison or slaughter each other, expire from typhoid fever and typhus, because it is filth and lice, and not dragons, which threaten your splendid cities, where women are delivered of children once a year, but where only one newborn baby in 10 lives longer than 10 days. Yes! Yennefer. Fecundity, fecundity, and once again, fecundity. So, take up bearing children, my dear. It's the most natural pursuit for you. It will occupy the time you are currently fruitlessly wasting on dreaming up nonsense. Farewell. Urging on his horse, the sorcerer galloped off towards the head of the column. Geralt, having glanced at Yennefer's pale, furiously twisted face, began to feel sorry for him in advance. He knew what this was about. Yennefer, like most sorceresses, was barren. But unlike most sorceresses, she bemoaned the fact and reacted with genuine rage at the mention of it. Doragare certainly knew that, but he probably did not know how vengeful she was.
"He's in trouble," she hissed. "Oh, yes. Beware, Geralt. Don't think that when the time comes and you don't show good sense, I'll protect you."
"Never fear," he smiled. "We, and I mean witches and servile golems, always act sensibly. Since the limits within which we operate are clearly and explicitly demarcated."
"Well, I never,"
Yennefer said, looking at him still pale.
"You're taking umbrage like a tart whose lack of chastity has been pointed out to her. You're a witcher. You can't change that. Your vocation..."
"That's enough about vocations, Yen, because it's beginning to make me queasy."
"I told you not to call me that. And I'm not especially bothered about your queasiness, nor any other reactions in your limited witcher's range of reactions."
"Nevertheless, you'll see some of them if you don't stop plying me with tales about lofty missions and the fight between good and evil. And about dragons, the dreadful enemies of the human tribe. I know better."
"Oh, yes." The sorceress narrowed her eyes. "And what do you know, witcher?"
"Only," Geralt said, ignoring the sudden warning vibration of the medallion around his neck, "that if dragons didn't have treasure hoards, not a soul would be interested in them, and certainly not sorcerers. Isn't it interesting that whenever a dragon is being hunted, some sorcerer closely linked to the Goldsmiths Guild is always hanging around, just like you? And later, although a deal of gemstones ought to end up on the market, it never happens, and their price doesn't go down. So don't talk to me about vocation and the fight for the survival of the race. I know you too well. I've known you too long."
"Too long," she repeated, sneering malevolently. "Unfortunately. But don't think you know me well, you whore's son. Damn it! How stupid I've been! Oh, go to hell! I can't stand the sight of you!"
She screamed, yanked her horse's reins, and galloped fiercely ahead. The witcher
reined back his mount, and let through the wagon of dwarves, yelling, cursing, and whistling through bone pipes. Among them, sprawled on some sacks of oats, lay Dandelion, plucking his lute.
"Ee!" roared Yarp and Zigrin, who was sitting on the box, pointing at Yennefer. "There's something black on the trail. I wonder what it is. It looks like a nag."
"Without doubt,"
Dandelion shouted, shoving his plum bonnet back.
"It's a nag, riding a gelding. Astounding!"
The beards of Yarpen's boys shook in general laughter. Yennefer pretended not to hear. Geralt reined back his horse again and let Nidamir's mounted bowman through. Borch was riding slowly some distance beyond them, and the Zerikanians brought up the rear just behind him. Geralt waited for them to catch up and led his mare alongside Borch's horse. They rode on in silence.
"Witcher," Three Jackdaws suddenly said, "I want to ask you a question."
"Ask it."
"Why don't you turn back?"
The Witcher looked at him in silence for a moment.
"Do you really want to know?"
"Yes, I do,"
Three Jackdaws said, turning his face towards Geralt.
"I'm riding with him because I'm a servile golem. Because I'm a whisk of oakum blown by the wind along the highway. Tell me, where should I go, and for what? At least here some people have gathered with whom I have something to talk about. People who don't break off their conversations when I approach. People who, though they may not like me, say it to my face, and don't throw stones from behind a fence. I'm riding with them for the same reason I rode with you to the Log Driver's Inn. Because it's all the same to me. I don't have a goal to head towards. I don't have a destination at the end of the road."
Three Jackdaws cleared his throat.
"There's a destination at the end of every road. Everybody has one. Even you. Although you like to think you're somehow different."
"Now I'll ask you a question."
"Ask it."
"Do you have a destination at the end of the road?"
"I do."
"Lucky for you."
"It is not a matter of luck, Geralt. It is a matter of what you believe in and what you serve. No one ought to know that better than a witcher."
"I keep hearing about goals today,"
Geralt sighed.
"Nidamir's aim is to seize Maliori. Ike of Dinesli's calling is to protect people from dragons. Dorigere feels obligated to something quite the opposite. Yennefer, by virtue of certain changes which her body was subjected to, cannot fulfil her wishes and is terribly undecided. Damn it, only the Reavers and the Dwarves don't feel a calling and simply want to line their pockets. Perhaps that's why I'm so drawn to them."
"You aren't drawn to them, Geralt of Rivia. I'm neither blind nor deaf. It wasn't at the sound of their name you pulled out that pouch. But I surmise..."
"There's no need to surmise," the Witcher said, without anger.
"I apologize."
"There's no need to apologize."
They reined back their horses just in time, in order not to ride into the column of bowmen from Cairngorm, which had suddenly been called to a halt.
"What happened?"
Geralt stood up in his stirrups.
"Why have we stopped?"
"I don't know."
Borch turned his head away. Vea, her face strangely contorted, uttered a few quick words.
"I'll ride up to the front," the Witcher said, "to see what's going on. Stay here."
"Why?"
Three Jackdaws were silent for a moment, eyes fixed on the ground.
"Why?"
Geralt repeated.
"Go," Borch said. "Perhaps it'll be better that way."
"What'll be better?"
"Go."
The bridge connecting the two edges of the chasm looked sound. It was built from thick pine timbers and supported on a quadrangular pier, against which the current crashed and roared in long strands of foam.
"Hey, Beanpole!"
yelled Boholt, who was driving the wagon.
"Why have you stopped?"
"I don't know if the bridge will hold."
"Why are we taking this road?"
Gillenstiern asked, riding over.
"It's not to my liking to take the wagons across the bridge. Nay, a cobbler, why are you leading us this way and not by the trail? The trail continues on towards the west, doesn't it?"
The heroic poisoner of Bearfield approached, removing his sheepskin cap. He looked ridiculous, dressed up in an old-fashioned half-armour, probably hammered out during the reign of King Sambuk, pulled down tightly over a shepherd's smock.
"The road's shorter this way, Your Majesty," he said,
not to the Chancellor, but directly to Nidamir, whose face still expressed thoroughly excruciated boredom.
"How is that?"
Gillenstierne asked, frowning. Nidamir did not even grace the cobbler with a more attentive glance.
"Bams,"
Sheepbagger said, indicating the three notched peaks towering over the surrounding area,
"is Kiava, Great Kestrel, and Harbinger's Fang. The trail leads down towards the ruins of the old stronghold and skirts around Kiava from the north, beyond the river's source. But we can shorten the way by taking the bridge. We'll pass through the gorge and onto the plain between the mountains. And if we don't find no sign of the dragon there, we'll continue on eastwards. We'll search the ravines. And even further eastward, there are flat pastures where there's a straight road to Cairngorm, towards your land, sire."
"And where, Sheepbagger, did you acquire such knowledge about these mountains?" Boholt asked. "At your cobbler's last?"
"No, sir. I herded sheep here as a young'un."
"And that bridge won't give way?"
Boholt stood up on the box and looked downwards at the foaming river.
"That must be a drop of 40 fathoms.
Little old, sir.
What's a bridge doing in this wilderness, anyhow?"
"That there bridge," Sheepbagger said, "was built by trolls in the olden days, and whoever came this way had to pay them a pretty penny. But since folks seldom came this way, the trolls were reduced to beggary. But the bridge remains."
"I repeat," Gillenstierne said irately, "we have wagons with tackle and provender, and we may become bogged down in the wilderness. Is it not better to take the trail?"
"We could take the trail," the cobbler shrugged, "but it's longer that way, and the king said he'd give his ear teeth to get that dragon soon."
"Aye, teeth," the Chancellor corrected him.
"Have it your way, aye, teeth," Sheepbagger agreed, "but it's still quicker by the bridge."
"Right, let's go, Sheepbagger," Boholt decided. "Forge ahead, you and your men. We have a custom of letting the most valiant through first."
"No more than one wagon at a time," Gillenstierne warned.
"Right."
Boholt lashed his horses, and the wagon rumbled onto the bridge's timbers.
"Follow us, Beanpole. Make sure the wheels are rolling smoothly."
Geralt reined back his horse, his way barred by Nidamir's bowmen in their purple and gold tunics, crowded on the stone bridgehead. The witch's mare snorted. The earth shuddered. The mountains trembled. The jagged edge of the rock wall beside them became blurred against the sky, and the wall itself suddenly spoke with a dull but audible rumbling.
"Look out!"
Boholt yelled, now on the other side of the bridge.
"Look out there!"
The first small stones pattered and rattled down the spasmodically shuddering rock wall. Geralt watched as part of the road they had followed, very rapidly widening into a yawning, black crack, broke off and plunged into the chasm with a thunderous clatter.
"To horse!" Gillenstierne yelled. "Your Majesty, to the other side!"
Nidamir, head buried in his horse's mane, charged onto the bridge, and Gillenstierne and several bowmen leapt after him. Behind them, the royal wagon with its flapping griffin banner rumbled onto the creaking timbers.
"It's a landslide! Get out of the way!"
Yop and Zigrin bellowed from behind, lashing his horse's rumps, overtaking Nidamir's second wagon and jostling the bowman.
"Out of the way! Witcher, out of the way!"
Ike of Denezla, stiff and erect, galloped beside the dwarves' wagon. Were it not for his deathly pale face and mouth contorted in a quivering grimace, one might have thought the knight-errant had not noticed the stones and boulders falling onto the trail. Further back, someone in the group of bowmen screamed wildly and horses whinnied. Geralt tugged at the reins and spurred his horse, as right in front of him the earth boiled from the boulders cascading down. The dwarves' wagon rattled over the stones. Just before the bridge, it jumped up and landed with a crack on its side onto a broken axle. A wheel bounced off the railing and plunged downwards into the spume. The witch's mare, lacerated by sharp shards of stone, reared up. Geralt tried to dismount, but caught his boot buckle in the stirrup and fell to the side onto the trail. His mare neighed and dashed ahead, straight towards the bridge, dancing over the chasm. The dwarves ran across the bridge, yelling and cursing.
"Hurry, Geralt!"
Dandelion yelled, running behind him and looking back.
"Jump on, Witcher!"
Dorogoray called, thrashing about in the saddle, struggling to control his terrified horse. Further back, behind them, The entire road was engulfed in a cloud of dust, stirred up by falling rocks, shattering Nidamir's wagons. The Witcher seized the straps of the sorcerer's saddlebags. He heard a cry. Yennefer had fallen with her horse, rolled to the side, away from the wildly kicking hooves, and flattened herself to the ground, shielding her head with her arms. The Witcher let go of the saddle, ran towards her, diving into the deluge of stones and leaping across the rift, opening under his feet. Yennefer, yanked by the arm, got up onto her knees. Her eyes were wide open, and the trickle of blood running down from her cut brow had already reached her ear.
"Stand up, Yen!"
"Geralt, look out!"
An enormous, flat block of stone, scraping against the side of the rock wall with a grinding, clattering sound, slid down and plummeted towards them. Geralt dropped, shielding the sorceress with his body. At the very same moment, the block exploded, bursting into a billion fragments, which rained down on them, stinging like wasps.
"Quick!"
Dorogare cried. Brandishing his wand atop the skittering horse, he blasted more boulders, which were tumbling down from the cliff into dust.
"Onto the bridge, Witcher!"
Yennefer waved a hand, bending her fingers and shrieking incomprehensibly. As the stones came into contact with the bluish hemisphere which had suddenly materialized above their heads, they vaporized like drops of water falling on red-hot metal.
"Onto the bridge, Geralt!" the sorceress yelled. "Stay close to me!"
They ran, following Dorogare and several fleeing bowmen. The bridge rocked and creaked, the timbers bending in all directions as it flung them from railing to railing.
"Quick!"
The bridge suddenly slumped with a piercing, penetrating crack, and the half they had just crossed broke off, tumbling with a clatter into the gulf, taking the dwarves' wagon with it, which shattered against the rocky teeth to the sound of the horses' frantic whinnying. The part they were now standing on was still intact, but Geralt suddenly realized they were now running upwards across a rapidly tilting slope. Yennefer panted a curse.
"Get down, Yen. Hang on."
The rest of the bridge grated, cracked and sagged into a ramp. They fell with it, digging their fingers into the cracks between the timbers. Yennefer could not hold on. She squealed like a little girl and dropped. Geralt, hanging on with one hand, drew a dagger, plunged the blade between the timbers, and seized the haft in both hands. His elbow joints creaked as Yennefer tugged him down, suspended by the belt and scabbard slung across his back. The bridge made a cracking noise again and tilted even more, almost vertically.
"Yen," the Witcher grunted, "do something. Cast a bloody spell."
"How can I?"
he heard a furious muffled snarl.
"I'm hanging on."
"Free one of your hands."
"I can't."
"Hey,"
Dandelion yelled from above.
"Can you hold on? Hey!"
Geralt did not deign to reply.
"Throw down a rope,"
Dandelion bellowed.
"Quickly, damn it!"
The Reavers, the Dwarves, and Gilenstierne appeared beside the troubadour. Geralt heard Boholt's quiet words.
"Wait, Busker. She'll soon fall. Then we'll pull the Witcher up."
Yennefer hissed like a viper, writhing and suspended from Geralt's back. His belt dug painfully into his chest.
"Yen, can you find a hold? Using your legs, can you do anything with your legs?"
"Yes,"
she groaned.
"Swing them around."
Geralt looked down at the river, seething and swirling among the sharp rocks, against which some bridge timbers, a horse and a body in the bright colours of Cairngorm, were bumping. Beyond the rocks, in the emerald, transparent maelstrom, he saw the tapered bodies of large trout languidly moving in the current.
"Can you hold on, Yen?"
"Just about, yes."
"Heave yourself up. You have to get a foothold."
"I can't." "Throw down a rope,"
Dandelion yelled.
"Have you all gone mad? They'll both fall."
"Perhaps that's not so bad,"
Gilenstierne wondered out of sight. The bridge creaked and sagged even more. Geralt's fingers, gripping the hilt of his dagger, began to go numb.
"Yen, shut up! And stop wriggling about."
"Yen, don't call me that. Can you hold on?"
"No,"
she said coldly. She was no longer struggling, but simply hanging from his back, a lifeless, inert weight.
"Yen, shut up. Yen, forgive me."
"No, never."
Something crept downwards over the timbers. Swiftly, like a snake. A rope, emanating with a cold glow, twisting and curling as though alive, searched for and found Geralt's neck with its moving tip. slid under his armpits and ravelled itself into a loose knot. The sorceress beneath him moaned, sucking in air. He was certain she would start sobbing. He was mistaken.
"Careful!"
Dandelion shouted from above.
"We're pulling you up! Gar? Kennet! Pull them up! Heave!"
A tug, the painful, constricting tension of the taut rope. Yennefer sighed heavily. They quickly travelled upwards, bellies scraping against the coarse timbers. At the top, Yennefer was the first to stand up. Chapter 7
"We saved but one wagon from the entire caravan, Your Majesty,"
Gillenstern said.
"Not counting the weaver's wagon. 7 bowmen remain from the troop. There's no longer a road on the far side of the chasm, just scree and a smooth wall as far as the breach permits one to look. We know not if anyone survived of those who remained when the bridge collapsed."
Nidamir did not answer. Ike of Denesla, standing erect, stood before the king, staring at him with shining, feverish eyes.
"The ire of the gods is hounding us," he said, raising his arms. "We have sinned, King Nidamir. It was a sacred expedition, an expedition against evil. For the dragon is evil, yes, each dragon is evil incarnate. I do not pass by evil indifferently. I crush it beneath my foot, annihilate it, just as the gods and the holy book demand."
"What is he drivelling on about?" Behold asked, frowning.
"I don't know," Geralt said, adjusting his mare's harness. "I didn't understand a single word."
"Be quiet," Dandelion said. "I'm trying to remember it. Perhaps I'll be able to use it if I can get it to rhyme."
"The holy book says,"
Ike said, now yelling loudly,
"that the serpent, the foul dragon with 7 heads and 10 horns, will come forth from the abyss, and on his back will sit a woman in purple and scarlet, and a golden goblet will be in her hand, and on her forehead will be written the sign of all and ultimate whoredom."
"I know her," Dandelion said, delighted. "It's Cilia, the wife of the alderman of Somholder."
"Quieten down, poet, sir," Gillenstierd said. "And you, O knight from Denesley, speak more plainly, if you would."
"One should act against evil, O king," Ike called, "and with a pure heart and conscience, with head raised. But who do we see here? Dwarves who are pagans, are born in the darkness and bow down before dark forces. Blasphemous sorcerers, usurping divine laws, powers, and privileges. A witcher, who is an odious aberration, an accursed unnatural creature. Are you surprised that a punishment has befallen us, King Nidamir? We have reached the limits of possibility. Divine grace is being sorely tested. I call you, king, to purge the filth from our ranks before—"
"Not a word about me," Dandelion interjected woefully. "Not a mention of poets, and I try so hard."
Geralt smiled at Yarpin Zigrin, who, with slow movements, was stroking the blade of his battle-axe, which was stuck into his belt. The dwarf, amused, grinned. Yennefer turned away ostentatiously, pretending that her skirt, torn up to her hip, distressed her more than Ike's words.
"I think you are exaggerating a little, Sir Ike," Dorigare said sharply, "although no doubt for noble reasons. I regard the making known of your views about sorcerers, dwarves, and witches as quite unnecessary. Although I think we have all become accustomed to such opinions, it is neither polite nor chivalrous, Sir Ike. And it is utterly incomprehensible after you and no one else ran and used a magical elven rope to save a witcher and a sorceress whose lives were in danger. I conclude from what you say that you should rather have been praying for them to fall."
"Damn it," Geralt whispered to Dandelion. "Did he throw us that rope? Ike, not Dorigare."
"No," the bard muttered. "Ike it was, indeed." Geralt shook his head in disbelief. Yennefer cursed under her breath and straightened up.
"Sir Ike,"
she said with a smile that anyone other than Geralt might have mistaken as pleasant and friendly.
"Why was that? I'm blasphemous, but you saved my life."
"You are a lady, Madam Yennefer,"
the knight bowed stiffly,
"and your comely and honest face permits me to believe that you will one day renounce this accursed sorcery."
Boholt snorted.
"I thank you, Sir Knight," Yennefer said dryly. "And the witcher Geralt also thanks you." "Thank him, Geralt?"
"I'd rather drop dead,"
the Witcher sighed, disarmingly frank.
What exactly should I thank him for? I'm an odious aberration, and my uncomely face does not augur any hope for an improvement. Sir Ike hauled me out of the chasm by accident, simply because I was tightly clutching the comely damsel. Had I been hanging there alone, Ike would not have lifted a finger. I'm not mistaken, am I, Sir Knight?
You are mistaken, Geralt, sir, the knight-errant replied calmly. I never refuse anybody in need of help, even a witcher.
Thank him, Geralt, and apologize, the sorceress said sharply. Otherwise, you will be confirming that, at least with regard to you, Ike was quite right. You are unable to coexist with people because you are different. Your participation in this expedition is a mistake. A nonsensical purpose brought you here. Thus it would be sensible to leave the party. I think you understand that now. And if not, it's time you did.
What purpose are you talking about, madam?
Gillenstierne cut in. The sorceress looked at him but did not answer. Dandelion and Yopin Zigrin smiled meaningfully at each other, but so that the sorceress would not notice. The witcher looked into Yennefer's eyes. They were cold.
I apologize and thank you, O Knight of Dinesley. He bowed. I thank everybody here present for the swift rescue offered at once. I heard, as I hung there, how you were all raring to help. I ask everybody here present for forgiveness, with the exception of the noble Yennefer, whom I thank but ask for nothing. Farewell. The dregs leave the company of their own free will, because these dregs have had enough of you. Goodbye, Dandelion.
Hey, Geralt, Behold called. Don't pout like a maiden. Don't make a mountain out of a molehill. To hell with. Look out, everyone!
Sheepbagger and several members of the Bearfield Constabulary, who had been sent ahead to reconnoitre, were running back from the narrow opening to the gorge.
What is he? Why is he bellowing like that?
Gar lifted his head up.
Good people, your excellencies,
the cobbler panted.
Get it out, man,
Gillenstierne said, hooking his thumbs into his golden belt.
A dragon! There's a dragon there!
Where?
Beyond the gorge, on level ground. Sire, he...
To horse,
Gillenstierne ordered.
Gar, Boholt yelled. Onto the wagon! Beanpole, get mounted and follow me!
Look lively, lads! Yarpin Zigrin roared. Look lively, by thunder!
Hey, wait for me!
Dandelion slung his lute over his shoulder.
Geralt, take me with you!
Jump on!
The gorge ended in a mound of light-coloured rocks, which gradually thinned out, creating an irregular ring. Beyond them, the ground descended gently into a grassy, undulating mountain pasture, enclosed on all sides by limestone walls, gaping with thousands of openings. Three narrow canyons, the mouths of dried-up streams, opened out onto the pasture. Boholt, the first to gallop to the barrier of rocks, suddenly reined in his horse and stood up in his stirrups.
Oh, hell, he said. Oh, bloody hell. It can't be.
What?
Dorigaray asked, riding up. Beside him, Yennefer, dismounting from the reaver's wagon, pressed her chest against the rocky block, peeped out, moved back and rubbed her eyes.
What? What is it?
Dandelion shouted, leaning out from behind Geralt's back.
What is it, Boholt?
That dragon is golden.
No further than 100 paces from the gorge's rocky entrance from which they had emerged on the road to the northward leading canyon, on a gently curving low hill, sat the creature. It was sitting, arching its long, slender neck in a smooth curve, inclining its narrow head onto its domed chest, wrapping its tail around its extended front feet. There was something inexpressibly graceful in the creature and the way it was sitting. Something feline. Something that contradicted its clearly reptilian origins. But it was also undeniably reptilian. For the creature was covered in distinctly outlined scales which shone with a glaring blaze of bright yellow gold. For the creature sitting on the hillock was golden. Golden from the tips of its talons dug into the ground to the end of its long tail, which was moving very gently among the thistles growing on the hill. Looking at them with its large golden eyes, The creature unfurled its broad, golden, bat-like wings and remained motionless, demanding to be admired.
"A golden dragon," Dorigeray whispered. "It's impossible. A living fable."
"There's no such thing as a bloody golden dragon," Gar pronounced and spat. "I know what I'm talking about."
"Then what's sitting on that hillock?" Dandelion asked pointedly.
"It's some kind of trickery. An illusion."
"It is not an illusion," Yennefer said.
"It's a golden dragon," Gillenstern said. "An absolutely genuine golden dragon."
"Golden dragons only exist in fables."
"Stop that, all of you," Boholt suddenly broke in. "There's no point getting worked up. Any blockhead can see it's a golden dragon. And what difference does it make, my lords, if it's golden, lapis lazuli, shit-coloured or checkered? It's not that big. We'll sort it out in no time. Beanpole, Gar, clear the debris off the wagon and get the gear out. What's the difference if it's golden or not?"
"There is a difference, Boholt," Beanpole said, "and a vital one. That isn't the dragon we are stalking. Not the one that was poisoned outside Bearfield, which is now sitting in its cave on a pile of ore and jewels. That one's just sitting on its arse. What bloody use is it to us?"
"That dragon is golden, Kennet," Yarp and Zigrun snarled. "Have you ever seen anything like it? Don't you understand? We'll get more for its hide than we would for a normal treasure hoard."
"And without flooding the market with precious stones," Yennefer added, smiling unpleasantly. "Yarpin's right. The agreement is still binding. Quite something to divide up, isn't it?"
"Aye, Boholt,"
Gar shouted from the wagon, where he was clattering amongst the tackle. "What shall we equip ourselves and the horses with? What could that golden reptile belch, eh? Fire? Acid? Steam?"
"I haven't got an effing clue," Boholt said, sounding worried. "Hey, sorcerers, anything in the fables about golden dragons, about how to kill them?"
"How do you kill them? The usual way," Sheepbagger suddenly shouted. "No point pondering. Give us an animal, we stuff it full of something poisonous, and feed it to the reptile in good riddance."
Dorigeray looked askance at the cobbler. Boholt spat, and Dandelion turned his head away with a grimace of disgust. Yarpin Zigrin smiled repulsively, hands on hips.
"What are you looking at?" Sheepbagger asked. "Let's get to work. We have to decide what to stuff the carcass with so the reptile quickly perishes. It has to be something which is extremely toxic, poisonous, or rotten."
"Aha!"
The dwarf spoke, still smiling.
"Well, what's poisonous, foul, and stinks? Do you know what, Sheepbagger? Looks like it's you."
"What?
You bloody herd, you lost bodger, out of my sight." "Lord Dorigeray," Boholt said, walking over to the sorcerer. "Make yourself useful. Call to mind some fables and tales. What do you know about golden dragons?"
The sorcerer smiled, straightening up self-importantly.
"What do I know about golden dragons, you ask? Not much, but enough."
"We're listening."
"Then listen, and listen attentively. Over there before us sits a golden dragon, a living legend, possibly the last and only creature of its kind to have survived your murderous frenzy. One doesn't kill legends. I, Dorigeray, will not allow you to touch that dragon. Is that understood? You can get packed, fasten your saddlebags, and go home."
Geralt was convinced an uproar would ensue. He was mistaken.
"Noble sorcerer, sir,"
Gillenstern's voice interrupted the silence.
"Heed what and whom you speak. King Nidamir may order you, Dorigeray, to fasten your saddlebags and go to hell. But not the other way round, is that clear?"
"No," the sorcerer said proudly, "it is not, for I am Master Dorigeray, and will not be ordered around by someone whose kingdom encompasses an area visible from the height of the palisade on a mangy, filthy, stinking stronghold. Do you know, Lord Gillenstern, that were I to speak a charm and wave my hand, you would change into a cowpat, and your underage king into something ineffably worse? Is that clear?"
Gillenstern did not manage to answer, for Boholt walked up to Dorigeray, caught him by the shoulder, and pulled him around to face him. Gar and Beanpole, silent and grim, appeared from behind Boholt.
"Just listen, magician, sir," the enormous reaver said. "Before you wave that hand, listen to me.
I could spend a long time explaining what I would do with your prohibitions, your fables, and your foolish chatter, but I have no wish to. Let this suffice as my answer.
Boholt placed a finger against his nose.